Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, with such an extreme change in weather greeting us this morning, we'll hear from a local meteorologist with the National Weather Service on how this type of weather pattern, while unusual, isn't unheard of. Then the moisture is a welcome relief for firefighters battling the numerous fires around the state. Colorado has so far seen thousands of acres of forest go up in flames this summer. We'll hear how research at CU Boulder suggests that many of those forests that burned won't actually grow back. Then, with the Pine Gulch fire, now the biggest wildfire in Colorado history, we'll look at the lingering impact of what was previously the largest fire, the Hayman fire. 18 years later, burn scars remain. Then we'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line. After headlines from the BBC, it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, we continue our series on COVID-19 and the University of Colorado with a look at CU's many COVID-19 tests and especially wastewater testing for COVID-19. At 9 o'clock, it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. With temperatures plummeting today and over the next couple of days, advocates for the homeless say that more needs to be done to help those who are unhoused during this cold snap. In Denver, the Salvation Army says it is developing a plan to move people seeking shelter around the city while at the same time maintaining social distancing protocols. They say they are partnering with hotels to make space for people who need shelter if shelters are full. In Boulder, advocates for the homeless are criticising local response, saying that not enough shelter beds are in fact available for people who need to be off the streets. The advocacy group Boulder Safe says on its Facebook page that volunteers are working on the streets to get warm gear and supplies to people who are out on the streets during the severe cold and snow. They're asking for in-kind donations of items like sleeping mats, blankets and warm clothing, as well as donations to their mutual aid fund at actionnetwork.org. Clean water advocates are calling on federal and state officials to do more to protect Colorado's streams, ponds and lakes from toxic algal blooms. Reports have connected climate change to increased outbreaks, which are also fueled by agricultural and residential fertilizers. A warming climate and other factors have now put Colorado's lakes, reservoirs and ponds at greater risk for these outbreaks. Brian Kurzel with the National Wildlife Federation says a recent rash of blue-green cyanobacteria blooms in Colorado are more than just an eyesore. He says they're dangerous for people, pets and wildlife, and he says leaders at all levels of government need to confront the outbreak's root causes.
Whether that be climate change, whether that be nutrient pollution. And we need them to have the clarity of purpose that is on par with the clarity that we want in our drinking water.
Algal outbreaks disproportionately impact Black and Latino populations. And Kurzel says that until climate change and nutrient pollution are addressed, health disparities in Colorado are likely to increase. Expanding blooms also will make it harder for low-income people and communities of color to access safe outdoor green spaces. According to the CDC, toxic outbreaks can cause skin irritation, rashes and blisters around the mouth and nose in people. Pets can also be sickened, and owners in Georgia, North Carolina and Texas have reported deaths after their dogs swam in waters with toxic algae. The Cameron Peak Fire just west of Fort Collins exploded in size on Monday to more than 96,000 acres. The U.S. Forest Service was forced to close additional parts of the Roosevelt National Forest in Larimer County, and more evacuations were ordered. As of Monday, the fire was just 4% contained and an unknown number of structures were reported lost. Smoke was also present throughout the Front Range, contributing to already bad air quality. The Cameron Peak Fire is now on track to be the fifth largest fire in state history. The moisture that is coming into the state, though, is good news for firefighters battling not just the Cameron Peak fire, but the other fires around the state. There is a winter weather advisory until noon on Wednesday, with rain and snow in the forecast. Snow mostly after 9 o'clock this morning, but temperatures will be dropping to about 30 degrees by 5 p.m. today. Breezy conditions, though, also around the Front Range. Overnight, a chance of snow with low temperatures, lows in the mid-20s, and a chance of snow showers before 4 o'clock on Wednesday. Then after that, a slight chance of rain, but warming up slightly for Wednesday. Expect tomorrow's high to get to 40 degrees and then into the mid-50s and even mid-60s for Thursday and Friday. It is just coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. While flip-flops and snow boots might be footwear that we all expect to have in our homes in September and October, it does seem rather early to have snowplows hitting the streets. However, Todd Dankers, who is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service and their Boulder office, says that while it is early, it's not unheard of to have this type of weather pattern in September.
Well, it's been a long time since we've seen snow in September, but it's not unheard of, especially as we get into the latter half of September. We've had some good, back in the 90s, we had a couple pretty good storms in September. But this one here is about as earliest as we remember snow falling. But it's about a week later. Back in 1961, apparently there was snow on like the 2nd and 3rd of September. So that one would go down as earliest, and this one might be like the 2nd or 3rd earliest that we've seen it. So it is unusual, and it's been a long time since we have seen it happen like this.
Well, in addition to the snow, it's also such an extreme change in temperature. We've gone from record-setting highs to such lows as well. What causes such shifts in temperature?
Well, the high temperatures come from, if you get a ridge of high pressure that builds up, that gives you the warm temperatures. But then when you look at the weather on a hemispheric scale, if you got warm temperatures that start building north, then you're going to start, the flip side is cold air will get displaced out of Canada and could come down. It ends up being kind of the normal pattern, typical pattern through the rest of the winter, of warm air getting pushed northward and then cold air being driven south. So it's similar to what we'll see later on this year whenever we see also the upper air pattern is kind of developing into a four corners low, which is also the weather pattern that is preferable for bringing snow into the Front Range through the winter season. So to see a cutoff low this early in the season is a little unusual. But not unheard of.
Well, I know the moisture is certainly welcomed by the firefighters battling the various different fires, and particularly here along the Front Range, the Cameron Peak fire. Aside from the moisture benefiting the fires, what should people look out for? Because I know gardeners are concerned that the freezing temperatures that we might get tonight, that's really going to impact some of the plants that are still blooming right now. What should people be paying attention to?
Well, if they're going to, you protect any tender vegetation. Since we're looking for the lows, it's still in the upper 20s, and so it is possible if you protect vegetation that you might be able to save them, and if the temperatures warm back up, you may get a little bit more produce. But you would need to be careful with disconnecting hoses from houses because you don't want water to freeze in your hoses. But also what we'll be concerned about later tonight as we get snow continuing, all the leaves on these trees, if they start accumulating snow, that's going to be a lot of weight, and we may start seeing branches breaking off of trees. And so that could bring down power lines, or tree branches could fall on cars. So people are going to want to be careful where they park their car tonight, because if we get the heavy snow and some big tree branches come down, you see damage onto the cars. So those would be the things to look out for, would be hoses and not necessarily irrigation systems are probably okay, the underground systems, but hoses on the surface and connected to your house, you want to have those disconnected.
Well, it looks like things will warm up by the end of the week. When should we expect temperatures to start rising and getting warmer again?
Well, the cutoff low is going to hang around for a couple days, and now it's looking like Friday or Saturday before we get back to closer to normal temperatures. It'll be cold tonight. It's going to be probably go below freezing again Wednesday night. Thursday morning, we'll be back down to the freezing mark. Then Friday morning, we're looking at lows closer to 40. And Friday afternoon, high temperatures in the mid and upper 60s. So just today and tomorrow will be the chilly, soggy days. Like you say, the moisture is welcome. It's been quite dry. The fires are certainly going to benefit from having the moisture falling on them. So that's a good thing.
That's Todd Dankers, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Boulder. And there is that winter weather advisory in effect until 12 noon tomorrow and a freeze warning overnight as well, with overnight lows forecast to be just in the mid-20s. It is 15 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, the moisture is welcome by the firefighters battling the forest fires around the state. Now, Colorado has seen thousands of acres of forest go up in flames this summer, with summers that look like they're only getting warmer and forest fires even more intense. What will forests actually look like in coming decades? Well, a new study out of CU Boulder offers us a glimpse into the future, suggesting that many forests that are burning won't actually grow back and instead they'll convert to grasslands and shrubs. Kyle Rodman is the lead author of the study and he spoke with Jody Peterson at KVNF.
If things get warmer and drier, as we expect them to do in the upcoming decades, certainly places like that area, the Pine Gulch Fire, that were sort of marginally forested to begin with, we can expect those to be likely unforested in the future. The Grizzly Creek Fire is spanning a pretty broad elevational gradient. It's actually covering several different forest sites. And in general, they're all going to react a little bit differently. So places that have like resprouting broadleaf deciduous trees like gamble oak or aspen, these are species that will grow back almost instantly after the fires. In those places, we can expect to see pretty dense broadleaf deciduous shrubland or forest, you know, relatively soon after the fire. But when we talk about things like spruce and ponderosa pine and pinyon pine, these are species that need dispersal from unburned areas, really, or, you know, places that burned at a low severity to actually recover. Even at those high elevations, research has suggested that establishment of these trees tends to happen predominantly in wet, cool years. And we're just not seeing as many of those now as we did 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
If the same types of trees don't grow back after a wildfire, that will affect wildlife species, says Rodman.
About 80% of wildlife species on land use forests in some way for habitat. So when we think about the effects of a fire, a large fire in a part of a forest in Colorado, certainly it's going to have detrimental impacts on some species, but it's also likely to benefit others because there are certainly many species of birds, small mammal, large mammal that rely on and use shrublands, grasslands, and in particular burn areas. It's really important for some of these fires to happen for certain species.
Although we can't predict exactly how future forests will look after wildfires, landscapes could end up being very different from those we've known and loved, says Rodman.
One of the key things that came out of the study is just how different the future could look, both broadly speaking, that many places that we are familiar with may look different in 50 years if they burn and don't recover as forests.
And that was Kyle Rodman discussing his PhD research on how forests recover after wildfire. I'm Jody Peterson.
Well, wildfires are a reality for those living in the American West, but the impact on the landscape lingers long after the smoke is gone, with an estimated 2/3 of U.S. municipalities getting their drinking water from a source that originates in a forest. Fire and water are now inextricably linked. The Pine Gulch fire has now surpassed the Hayman fire south of Denver as the largest wildfire in Colorado's history. But the Hayman fire gives us a glimpse of what the lingering impacts will be. 18 years ago, it tore through over 138,000 acres. Burn scars still remain. Well, this morning, we revisit a story originally broadcast on KGNU in 2018 that takes a look at the impact of the Hayman fire on local water systems and maybe offers us a glimpse of what's to come as we continue to battle forest fires in 2020.
You have a cap rod up there and right here, because up there the geomark changed a lot. So
that's Ali Ray, a grad student at CSU who studies watersheds. She's here at the Four Mile State Wildlife Area between Denver and Colorado Springs. It's on the east side of the site of the Hayman Fire. That was the largest wildfire in the state's history, and it burned through more than 138,000 acres in 2012. The charred trees further up the hill are a reminder of the damage done to the landscape, but Ray and the other researchers are checking for other lingering impacts not so visible to the naked eye.
It's kind of hard to explain. Basically, in this black tube, there are two kind of cords, and they send signals back and forth to one another.
These sensors measure how much water is flowing through this creek. Water that ultimately will end up in the faucet of a kitchen somewhere in Denver. Gauging the water quantity will help researchers get a better understanding of the water quality, says Chuck Rhodes, a research scientist with the U.S. Forest Service.
So if you're interested in the amount of nutrients that are getting into a reservoir or that are making it down to Denver, you've got to multiply it by the amount of flow. So it's sort of, you know, you can have milligrams per liter of nitrogen, but this gives us the liters part. So it tells us, you know, what's that load going to look like.
And the nutrient load is high, a direct result of the fire. Trees that would absorb nutrients from the soil are dead, and those nutrients are now going directly into the water.
It's more than 10 times higher than what it was before. In some cases, it's 100 times above the baseline. So it's quite elevated, and you know, having a stream of one part per million nitrogen is something you wouldn't expect from a pristine forest watershed.
These levels don't impact human health, says Rhodes, but they are indicative of a damaged ecosystem, and that is of concern to all water users.
We're not worried that we're going to be poisoning people downstream with these levels of nutrients. But we are concerned that it can have an effect on the aquatic life, that it might be altering what can live in these streams and changing sort of the pristine nature of this water.
Denver Water is paying attention to this type of research. They're heavily invested in fire mitigation in the 2.5 million acres of watershed area in Denver Water's collection system. The source water starts at the mountaintops with precipitation. It runs down through forests to streams, to reservoirs, onto treatment plants, and then into our faucets. Christina Burry is Denver Water's watershed scientist. She says a watershed is vital infrastructure, just like a water line or a pipe.
It all starts with the forests, and healthy forests equal healthy watersheds.
And when the watershed is damaged, it can impact the water supply.
For instance, after the Buffalo Creek and the Hayman wildfires, they were so high intensity that they sterilized the soil, they caused erosion issues. And so because of the exposed soil and also the sterilized soil, it runs off into our streams, to our reservoirs. And we had approximately 1 million cubic yards of sediment drain into Strauncha Springs Reservoir after the Buffalo Creek and the Hayman wildfires.
Burry says Denver Water is working with others in the watershed in their fire mitigation efforts.
the term that we like to use is an all hands, all lands approach, because the fire doesn't stop at property boundaries. And because these fires, we're predicting them to be even more intense, more expansive, and a lot more damaging to all the different interests of all the stakeholders in the watershed, we have to have this all hands, all lands approach where we partner together to try to be proactive in preventing another really high intensity fire.
Denver Water is partnering with the U.S. Forest Service, the Colorado State Forest Service, and the Natural Resources Conservation Service in its Forests to Faucets campaign. So far, 48,000 acres have been treated with forest thinning, clearing and creating fuel breaks, as well as restoration projects.
Yeah, I mean, if you put a lysimeter in here, it's going to be done. You know,
back at the Haman fire site, Rhodes and Ray are scouting for other possible locations for additional sensors.
Is that a problem?
There is surprisingly little data available on the long-term impacts of fire on watersheds. Rhodes and his fellow researchers here at the Haman site are hoping to change that with what they find here.
We're really kind of in an area of new science, because there have been few long-term data sets that have exposed this kind of information, and we're just trying to get at it.
With an almost year-round fire season and an increase in bigger and more intense wildfires in the American West, it's likely there will be more opportunities to study other fire-damaged watersheds and build on this body of knowledge. For Connecting the Drops and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio stations and Water Education Colorado. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org.
And you can find our entire series on water issues, Connecting the Drops, online at news.kgnu.org. That report was produced and originally broadcast in 2018. At that time, the Haman fire was the largest fire in the state history. However, this summer, in fact, just in the last couple of weeks, the Pine Gulch fire has now surpassed that. So we'll be doing a lot more coverage on the impact and the long-term impact of forest fires in Colorado here on KGNU. It is just coming up on 8:26. It's time now for the Comment Line.
Today is September 4th, Friday. I turned the radio on about 4:50 and I heard the tail end of the program. I don't know the name of the program, but David Greger was... It was a rebroadcast of an interview with David Greger, the guy that organized Occupy, an anarchist thinker. He died at the age of, I haven't got that really straight, I'm hard of hearing, 59 or 69 or 50-something or 60-something. And at the end of the program, the interviewer said something very important. Cause of death is still unknown. That's the kind of program that needs to, or could, and should, trade places with the BBC so more people can hear it. I need to find out more about that. I want to know why he died. I want to know who gave the autopsy. And I want to know why that program is before 5 o'clock. It should be after 5 o'clock. Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, KGNU. I just wanted to compliment the great job that Liz Lane did on last week's It's the Economy show. She did an excellent interview with Neil Gilman about the Election Day war game planning, and I was truly inspired. It was extremely educational to learn that this bipartisan project has been going on for over a year to ensure that the 2020 presidential election is successful and honestly executed, or as well as it can be, given the extraordinary circumstances we're living in. I'm so grateful to have KGNU and reporters like Liz Lane covering this important issue and helping to keep us all informed. Thanks again.
Well, hello. I haven't called in a long time. How y'all doing? And wish you all the best. And your music that you play is really second to none. Even though I do call you Kindness Radio station, because a lot of things I'm hearing is from a Marxist standpoint. I've skimmed the Marxist Manifesto, but let me not. I said I was gonna. Y'all might see that as something good, so I wanted to mention your music is absolutely very good. it's very admirable, I'll say, the music that you play. And you even play gospel and some gospel that bluegrass and everything that I appreciate. And what I really liked was the things that, and that's what comes down to, is loving one another. Interesting enough, some of the music reflected that, and I think that was just absolutely tremendous.
Hi, this is Jim out of Westminster, a longtime listener member, and I just finished listening to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour on Monday the 7th, or maybe it's the 8th, and I just found it to be an incredible show. It's one of the best ones in the last few months. And I wanted to compliment KGNU for carrying it. It had David K. Johnston and another author whose last name was Freeze, whose book was Industrial Espionage, Industrial Denial. And both authors were incredible. They really informed their listeners, and it's gotten me motivated to look into both the issues and see if there's something that I can't do to help change it. So thank you, KGNU. Appreciate what you're doing.
And that is the comment line. You can call it 303-447-9911. Call it anytime, leave a message, and we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings.